This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 776, brought to you by DC Universe Online. The popular superhero MMO just released its new expansion, World of Flashpoint. Inspired by the events of DC's Flashpoint storyline, you can download and play it free today on PC, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Nintendo Switch. And Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit mackweldon.com/iFanboy and enter promo code iFanboy. Fanboy Pick Week episode 776. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
I just laughed at my own comment there. Sorry. It's just for us, though. If you're at
we
home.
We put jokes in after each other's names in the script, and some of them are inappropriate.
Well, after yours, I wrote stunned silence, and I waited. Yeah. You didn't pause. So
right.
I was thrown off, and then I was like, what did I write for mine? Oh.
We are iFanboy. And everyone read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the one they like the best. We call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book. We'll talk about other books. There's a lot of books this week. It was a monster week of comics.
Yeah.
If we talked about all of the books we could have talked about, the show would be 2 hours long, and we don't have time for that.
We had to make cuts. Like, yeah. I there was real,
painful
like...
cuts.
Yeah,
painful
true.
Cuts.
True.
If you're listening going, why aren't you talking about this book? It's because we just didn't have time. We wish we could talk about them all. We answer some of the listener mail sometimes, and probably not this week. Also, the patron pick. These are all the things we do on the show. It's fun. Spoiler warning. Here's your spoilers. This is a review show. This week, Josh, you had the pick.
The pick is Carmen number 2 from Guillaume March in Image Comics. And I'm just as surprised as you are. So
Carmen number 1 was the patron pick. We probably wouldn't have...
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't have read it without that. So.
Yeah, it was just...
Good for
your patrons. There were several books that I could have made pick of the week.
This week?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
There were a lot of books. I think we each had 26, 27 books, something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it was a good week. I read a lot of books I liked. And so when I'm going through like the stuff to pick for this week, even what we're going to put in the show, I was like, this is really tough. We're going to have to leave out stuff that I would like to talk about. And part of that was I just thought, well, what surprised me, what mm-hmm. gave me something I didn't expect, what gave me something that didn't feel like everything else that I've read before, you know, and Carmen was that book this week. The first and most obvious thing about it is that it is gorgeous. It is a smorgasbord of comic book storytelling about a completely different type of story. And honestly, you know, the main character is this naked woman, basically, who's sort of floating around, and I don't mean that to sound licentious, because it's not really the case. Not that it isn't. It's a sexy book, which is also a thing that just doesn't happen in comic books a lot in that way. Like, so much of comics can be kind of prudish, or like,
oh, for sure.
Comics
yeah.
approach sex in a very adolescent way.
Yes,
and so to see a book that handles it differently, interesting.
I mean, she's an attractive woman, but I would say there's no sex in this book. It's not sexy. It's sad. She's dying.
Sort of, but I don't know. I don't know that I agree with that fully. I think that there's definitely an element there, but it's European. It's got sort of a different take on things, but you're also dealing with character stuff. So basically, the deal is that this woman has died. Did she kill herself?
Well, I think she's dying. I don't know that the jury's
really?
Up that she's died yet.
Oh.
I think we're just interpreting what this
yeah,
book
yeah.
is about. We don't know yet. I mean, what we thought we knew in episode one is turned on its head in this issue, which we'll talk about. But in the first issue, this woman cut her wrists because the reasons why she cut her wrists were wrong in terms of the first issue, what we thought they were.
Right.
And death has come for her. And so she's floating around naked in the city where she lived. As she is, I guess, starting to make her journey. But in this issue, we find out a lot about
her and why she cut herself. And then there's an interesting scene in the middle in which Death takes somebody else.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't think she's dead yet is because when she takes this guy from the plane, he goes right into the sea of people who are going up to heaven. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, he immediately drops from the plane into this like school of fish. Mm-hmm. And they all, you know, where she is still sort of making her journey around the town.
It's interesting that this version of Death is very similar to the Neil Gaiman Death, where mm-hmm. the cute girl shows up and has a little conversation with you. And us, we viewers get to see the irony of it. So the man in the plane is like, I like pork. Maybe I ate it too much. It's too bad about that guy, though. And it was like, it's you. You're the one who had a coronary event. She's not just floating around the city. She was sort of taught she could fly in this sort of state.
She's swimming.
Yeah, okay. So she's moving all over the place. And because she was discovered in the bath naked, she doesn't have clothes on. And so part of the beginning is like, no one can look at me like this. And she's covering herself up. And then there's a freedom that sort of happens when she realizes that. And I think that's the first sort of metaphor that I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, is that she's dealing with, and I think this is where you get between the, whether it's sexy or not or whatever, and it's a lot of things all at once. You know, like it is very realistic and you kind of, like where she's kind of embarrassed and she's covering herself up and she realizes like, nobody's looking at me. And then at one point she thinks somebody's looking at her. So there's all this stuff that has to do with worth and body issues and stuff that's going on sort of in the background. I think it's not in your face, but when you're watching her react to things and like what should be important versus what is important or isn't, like mm-hmm. she shouldn't be concerned. She's a wraith floating around. You know, who gives a shit if she's right. naked? But, you know, it's so deeply ingrained in our psyches, you know, how it should be. And, you know, and the way that they're talking about it and just sort of seeing this girl be comfortable or not. And then finally she stops focusing on those things that don't matter. And she starts to talk about what it is that really happened and what's going on. And I just found it really compelling. I found it, mm-hmm. you know, when we say something is European or actually really any sort of foreign comic, I've seen this with South American comics as well. It's not that the points of views of the characters are so different from us. I think humans are humans and comics are really good at relating that with the translation. But there is a visual style. There's just a little bit of difference approach mm-hmm. to thing that isn't sort of the thing that we see in mainstream American comics.
And it's not like E.O. March isn't someone who does
right.
a ton of American comics. I think he's doing Joker, right? The Joker book right now.
Yeah.
So it's not like he brings that,
but
he's
this
not,
is,
he's not like her gay, you know?
Yeah. This is another kind of thing. I think this is a little like, it felt a little like Day Tripper.
I think. Yes, for sure. It's got you know, that vibe to it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's just something about that, I mean, I find the time, like I'm searching for meaning, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just like, is the artist trying to communicate something here, or is it just what it is? Am I trying to pull something out of it that isn't there? And I like that. I like that there's seeming depth to it. Mm-hmm. And you know, this, the pages are gorgeous.
It's
you know,
really
like it's actually, it's a really, we talk about storytelling a lot. It's a very, strong bit of storytelling as well, but again, in a different style, cause they're not telling the same kind of story where there's like action and a meeting and whatever. It's storytelling sort of about emotions and feelings and it really, you know, like also just real regular life stuff, you know, that's at the same mm-hmm. time, but also we've talked about sort of a lack of slice of life books. And this has a lot of that in it, even though there is a supernatural element to an extent.
Death is death, you know,
right.
I mean, what we perceive at the moment of death is, I guess, could be called supernatural.
Yeah. Well, you know, the floating around ghost afterwards, I think, but yeah. Either way, like it's still rooted in a human story, and the human is interesting, you know, and the other people who are in it are interesting. This relationship that she has with this guy, you know, that she's known.
Well,
since
I want to talk about that, because that I think is the most interesting part of this issue. With the last issue we talked about, we thought she had killed herself because this guy that she grew up with, who she's in love with, was cheating on her with a roommate. And that's actually not the case. The case is that the guy she grew up with is in love with, has a girlfriend, and was cheating on her with the roommate. And she, the protagonist.
And we met her in the beginning. We met the girlfriend in the beginning, and then she was awful. So
the girl, the protagonist, whose name I don't know, is upset that he didn't pick her because she's been in love with him since they were kids. And so he chose the roommate, and so she's distraught, and that's why she cuts her wrists. And then so two things that happened that were interesting. One was that as she was talking about it, the blood started coming out of the bandages, which I thought was
that was a really great
visual, disturbing touch. And then she tries to kill herself again as a already dying person, which was, I thought, really powerful. I liked the bit in the middle with the guy, that the reveal was nice, and it was a nice moment to show you what's happening elsewhere. But then I thought the ending, the last scene, which is the scene where we learn everything, was really, really strong.
The sort of blood showing up and that color and the change of her mood, I thought, was really great. I do want to mention also really quickly, again, as I'm flipping through this now, the storytelling in this is stunning. Like, it is all over the place. Those pages that you were just talking about, where she's standing on top of that, whatever that weird geometric shape is, that sculpture, it's words, actually, it's letters. You know, and as we look, oh, there's a different one. It's sort of shaped like stairs. But I mean, these panels are like, these are like David Aja, but pretty. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what's going on there. And like the facial acting and his anatomy on this girl's amazing. Like, it's so good. And then I was
talking about before, she has a very realistic body. She has folds, and she has a bit of a round belly, but she's still very, she's not a supermodel body. She's a real person's body. And
as
it makes
more
relatable.
You've got this huge overhead shot of a plane with its wheels down, and you see in the background, the mountains and the city. I don't remember where they are here. Is it South America? Something.
I don't remember.
Whatever. Maybe it's Spain. I think it's Spain. Anyway, it's a gorgeous sort of overhead shot. And then we see Death talking to the guy. And then when we cut to the wider shot, it's done like with a wide angle lens. Like, everything is distorted and has a big depth of field. And, you know, the guy's looking out the window, or his spirit or whatever. And Death is checking her texts.
Right.
It's a lot of things going on at once. You know, the page with all the bodies falling out of it is, there's just no expense spared on this thing. The coloring is really beautiful. I kind of didn't realize, like, she's blue the whole time, but you kind of forget about it. And it's a really nice contrast with the reddishness of her hair. And, you know, it's just a really rich world. And it's kind of sort of poetic and beautiful and floating. His lines are amazing. It's just, I was just blown away. I didn't really know what to think so much of the first one, other than it was really good, but I found myself really captivated by the second issue. And so when I was looking at everything, you know, and we'll talk about some of the other ones that had a shot here, and it was kind of close, you know, I thought, well, this is really the thing that made me the happiest. This is the one that next time an issue comes out, I'm going to be excited about.
Yeah, I liked the first issue. We talked about the first issue. We liked it. I thought this issue was terrific. This is really, really good. Who do you think texts with Death?
I assume that's like, we got one up on 4th Street. She's like, I'll be there in a minute. But it's not like, there's not like a person on the other end. It's just like a system.
So it's not like, did you see Falcon and Winter Soldier yet?
Yeah.
No, not yet. I've been busy taking bodies.
Although she's ready to hang out with the girl.
Yeah.
So
she's ready to party.
She seems like a good friend to have, this Death.
Yeah.
She's a cool chick.
Yeah. So I when your email came through, I was not surprised.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
So it was a very good issue. But you're right. This was a week where you had a ton of options.
Yeah.
Which is a whole different problem than when you have no options. I think it's a better problem.
It's a much better problem, because you at least get a chance to talk about those other things and sort of be like, well, you know, this was great too. Rorschach number 7 came out, and I'm not going to tell you that it was my favorite issue, but I could have made it pick of the week just based on the fact that it was about Frank Miller turning into Rorschach. And if you haven't read it, let that sink in for a minute.
Yeah.
And all of the myriad possibilities of what that conjures for you.
So apparently this is based on a story that Frank Miller told Tom King about going to a seance with a bunch of old comic creators, when
Otto
he was
Binder,
young creator. So this is the underlying story here is based on something that actually happened. But the part where then Frank Miller starts dressing like Rorschach, and talking like Rorschach. I don't believe this happened, but who knows, you know?
I
don't know.
I have not read a book that I have done so much flipping back and forth in to sort of like, because, and I don't think, this isn't to say I think it was badly done. I think it was so subtly done that I kept looking back to be like, wait, where are we? What's the clue here? And then I go back. I downloaded the last issue so I could see where we left off at the end of that, because at the end of that one, the investigator guy is knocking on a door and I was like, wait, so is this his door? And then I'm reading the book and it didn't occur to me that that was Frank Miller until at one point, a couple of pages in, he's like, well, when I came from Vermont, I was like, wait, yep. Is that Frank Miller? and then so I go back and I'm like, wait, the guy who answered the door is Rorschach though. And so you're switching back and forth. I kept going back and there were no storytelling problems. I want to be clear about that, but I just wanted to see the breadcrumbs as they were laid out and understand it. And it was the weirdest fucking thing. So either way, when Rorschach's over, I'm having Tom back on Talksplode. Because this needs to be worked out.
So one thing I really like about this book, and also it was also dealt with in the TV series, was the fallout, the psychic trauma from the end of the original Watchmen story. You know, how this fake alien invasion really affected people, because that was obviously the big plot point of the show. And here, you know, the idea that the squids are coming back is, you know, permeates through this group. And that was, I like that bit, because it was that would be pretty traumatic if the giant octopus invaded. Then you get into the weirdness of, you know, this tape and hearing secret messages in the tape, and the tape says to kill Turley, which was the inciting incident of this series. So that's weird. Frank Miller walking around dressed as Rorschach by himself in his house.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And he was all dressed. He didn't know the guy was coming.
Unless like he has the suit and the mask ready to go by the door. And he was like, hold on. And he had to get ready.
Otherwise, that's the only way that he'll see other people.
Otherwise he was just hanging out in his house dressed as Rorschach.
I kept going back to the fact like, all right, so they say in this that Frank Miller didn't do the Dark Knight, he did the Dark Fife, because in this world, pirates are the thing and not superheroes. So that's right. Just a little thing that happens. It's not like saying 555 for a phone number. There's a reason that it's not Dark Knight. But if you think about it, you know, The Watchmen, 1986, you know, that and Dark Knight are the two, you know, the game changers, the it's like the Beatles of comic books. That was the year of the Beatles and Stones. And it's interesting to have him in this story get transformed by that. And I don't know what or if it means anything, but it's an interesting juxtaposition, because he's known for basically doing the same thing at the same time in concert with Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. And he is now the character. I also really like the idea that like Rorschach, and this happened in the show as well, I think he's using it, has become like this concept. It's like it's almost like a Q kind of thing.
He's the martyr of the story.
Yeah.
And he, for a certain type of person, he would definitely become the totem.
Yeah. But for us, because we got to know, you know, Kovacs so well in the original series, like he's become a legend, but we're like, well, we saw what the person was. We saw how sort of broken and sad he was and how he ended, and nobody knows any of that.
Right.
Really?
Only we do. Only we know the truth, Josh.
Yeah. Well, if you just do your research, the facts are all
it's
there.
All right there. It's all right there. And the Fornes art is incredible. I mean, you know, likenesses can be wonky. He gets Frank Miller a couple of times really right, and the rest of the time it's sort of a generic old man face. But
that when he opens the door though, it's like shit. Well, in the beginning when it's young Frank Miller, I mean this would have been like early 70s, I think, is what he said. You know, like, it's not entirely clear who you're looking at, because we don't know what he looks like then, because we weren't around. But
well, we've seen photos of him.
But not that early, I don't think. I haven't.
It doesn't really matter. It's just that there's a very deliberate pace to this story, and I think Fornes's art works, the art he's using here works really well. It's a very deliberate, you know, panel layouts, the shots. You know, we often complain about, and they're not boring at all. This is not what I've been complaining about a couple episodes ago, but it's not super that dynamic from a storytelling point of view. So you get that reinforced to you by the art. It feels like a TV show, and I'm not saying that they're aping, they're not aping a TV show, but it just feels very deliberate. There's a lot of great progressions. I liked the progression on page 19 where Ditko's getting older as he obsesses over the tape. That's a great sequence.
Was Ditko at that seance?
Not according to what I read about that interview with Tom King. It was on Word Balloon, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was. I don't know.
That would be amazing.
But I like that this is Tom King taking Watchmen, taking a bit of comic book lore, real world comic book lore, and taking sort of, you know, the paranoia we live in now and just sort of melding it all together into this story. That's really compelling. I have no idea where it's going, and I love that.
Yeah, and I think this is a case of our trust being rewarded to a certain extent, because all the weird shit at the beginning really is coming together, and I don't know where it's going. I don't know what it means, but I don't feel like I'm lost, which is not an accident that I also refer to the show, which is the one that makes me feel like that, and I'm still angry about. It's really good. And also, like, the TV show is involved with this, and, you know, as a Watchmen comic book purist, I have no problem including that show, you know, in this story and the sort of feelings that are in there.
I'd like to get back to what you said a minute ago. Yeah. I'm rereading the page 18 on a digital reader. It is very much like your current conspiracy theories, because we know the truth, the readers, because we read the original story, but the people don't in this world don't know the truth, so they have to come up with a reason why the invasion happened and the reason why Dr. Manhattan didn't stop it. So we know the truth, but they don't. So they've concocted an entire, you said it, Q-like conspiracy theory. It's not that exactly, about why this happened, because they have to make sense in their own brain as to why their superpowered protector didn't save them. So
that's
really interesting.
At the end of Watchmen, Rorschach's journal, which apparently has the whole story in it, goes to the American Statesman.
The New Frontiersman?
Something like that. Yeah. It goes to their, you know, like their
wacko paper. Too far away to grab.
Their conspiracy newspaper.
Yeah.
And it ends up on the stack of sort of mail.
Right.
And we don't really know what happens after that. But was Rorschach's journal referred to in the TV show?
I don't think so.
I don't know if it got out. And so that would really explain, like, if nobody knows, and there would be nobody to talk about it. Like, everyone's dead other than Laurie, but she wasn't there at the end.
No, Laurie and Night Owl are alive.
Yeah.
Ozymandias is alive, Manhattan alive. The only one's dead is Rorschach.
Okay. So the story would exist. Right. It's interesting. I mean, it doesn't mean anybody would believe it, and obviously we've seen how information or the lack thereof can mutate into something that may as well be real for people.
But, and it doesn't mean this is a widespread belief. It's a belief of these guys who listen to this tape.
Right.
They believe this theory. They believe that Dr. Manhattan is talking to them through this reel to reel tape.
But I think the idea that the squids were an alien invasion, which is what Ozymandias wanted it to seem like, people believe that is a thing that happened.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So like they don't know that those were just squid. And they got teleported and dropped, and, you know, so that's not a known thing. But there are people who know that.
Not really.
Well, unless they found, anyway, I guess Rorschach's journal wouldn't be updated at that point, because when he found out, he got killed right after. Or I guess maybe he figured it out. I don't know.
The point is, I like that there's this group of comic creators who have decided the only reason it makes sense is if Dr. Manhattan, you know, failed, and he's sending us messages now, and so this is all wrapped up in a lot of things that are going on now in the world.
But also,
being on the nose.
A lot of times when people include comic book real people in stuff, it's really sort of self-congratulatory and sort of silly, and it's fun. I mean, like, I don't know if everybody is going to enjoy this as much as you and I, because, like, we know these people, we know the story, we know comic book people, like, it's interesting. But I think in this context, because Watchmen is such a self-referential thing, it's not a story that exists on its own. I mean, you can read it that way, but it is built on comic book history, like knowing that it's a comic book matters a lot to it. So having these people come in and be characters in this, I think, is completely valid. You know, that's how Frank Miller is sort of tangentially related to it, because he's part of that movement. The Steve Ditko character is related to it because Rorschach is based on his character. You know, it's the Question. So that's how he's related to it. Like, and I'm sure Otto Binder, whose name I know, but that's about it. Like, I was like, that's a real person. And I looked him up, and it is. I think it all works. I think it's that, it's the right kind of postmodernism, for a big word. Anyway, it was great. I'm not going to sit here and be like, I loved it. But afterwards, I was like, wow, something happened. You know, and it was cool.
Yeah. I was like, okay, so we're doing this. All right, let's do it. So we talked about Infinite Frontier and DC's new paradigm, which is basically anything goes in your story. And so I think even though there's no Infinite Frontier branding on the cover, Batman the Detective number one, the new miniseries from Tom Taylor, Andy Kubert, Brad Anderson, and Clem Robbins, is a very clear expression of that. Because here we have basically a future tale of Batman, old man Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if continuity is not as important, supposedly, and you have the freedom to tell what you want, then Tom Taylor telling the story of, you know, older, beefier, I'm not going to say Dark Knight, because he's not that old yet, but...
He's a little bit Ben Affleck Batman here.
Yeah. Then sure, go for it. I mean, in the old days, this just would have had an Elseworlds stamp on the front.
That was really my main thought when I finished it. I thought, there's another one. There's another book that we're going to talk about later, too, that just should have had something like that.
Right.
I was like, oh, it's an Elseworlds story, which I'm so used to now in DC that I don't even think about it that way, because they do it all the time. I thought this is going to be the one, if anything, that Connor's going to get mad at me.
No, I thought this was really good, but
yeah.
Like this week was a... I don't know what I would have done. This was a embarrassment of riches this week.
I thought this was pretty good, but I wasn't blown away by it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
And I think I saw people on the Discord be like, wow, that's the best Batman I've read in a really long time. You know, I can see that, and I can see why it's exciting. There was absolutely nothing objectionable in it, and it was a good story and a good plot, but there wasn't that one little bit that sort of put it over the top for me. I did think that Andy Kubert art was fantastic.
I thought it was some of the best stuff he's done in a while.
Yeah, really, very much so.
It took me a while to, and there's a couple of wonky things, but it took me a while to sort of get used to the beefier Batman. Like, he's like a bruiser.
I like that. I like that, especially if he's getting into sort of, you know, late middle age or something like that, because he's not going to be as lithe. He's not going to be as, you know, as you and I know, packing on muscle is probably one of the best ways to protect yourself because everything else is failing. So that's a thing that he can do. And I like that as a look too. I don't know that he necessarily had to wear the detective outfit or whatever that is, the coat, but
well, he's in another world. So he's in the story opens and there's an attack. So Knight and Squire, let's go back to them. They were the characters. I don't remember if they originated there or not. They may not have. The Paul Cornell miniseries from a few years ago that we really liked.
They didn't originate there. He took them, but.
So Knight and Squire, that's the last time I remember reading about them. They're sort of British Batman and Robin.
They were in, Grant Morrison used them.
That's right. And so here, the woman Beryl who was Squire is now Knight because we're in the future. And she has a new Squire. And Beryl, aka Knight, is attacked on a plane by a bunch of people wearing white Batman outfits or masks. And that brings Bruce to, who, you know, it's older. Alfred's dead, which he's dead everywhere. You know, the family's gone. He's decided he hasn't done any good in Gotham. So he basically shuts down the manor and he goes to England to investigate this attack. And, you know, he's got his luggage. He's moving to England.
And I'm coming to London, Doug.
And so he's got a new outfit. It's, you know, he's got high boots. He's got a leather jacket cape instead of a cape. I think it looks cool.
It does.
And then he teams up with the new Squire to figure out what's going on. It involves Gentleman Ghost. He's got special gloves that lets him punch the ghost, which I thought was fun. And so we don't really know what's going on here other than there's people in England who are dressing up as white Batman And they're out to kill everyone that he has saved. That's the big reveal.
Yeah, I mean, through some comic book logic that we're not going to worry about, they arranged for everybody on that plane to have been somebody that he was alive. He saved. The point is that Batman is going back to. He goes, I didn't make a difference overall, but I know that I made a difference to those individuals, and that's sort of what he's clinging to. And now somebody's trying to take that away from him.
Yeah, I think it's a good story.
It's a great idea. And it's a good pitch.
I think it was. A lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
I think it was not at all what
I expected when they announced a Batman miniseries from Tom Taylor, but I was like, all right, let's go for it.
Well, you know,
let's tell this Elseworlds story.
The good bits about it, I think it actually really reminded me of a Grant Morrison type of story where, you know, Gentleman Ghost is a very silly character. It's a very, you know, and the way that he beats him up, it's just that it was done very straightforward. It was more clear than a Grant Morrison story. You know, in that way, so it's a little more accessible, I think. I really liked the stuff between Batman and Beryl, you know, in the hospital, the way that they talk to each other, that relationship there. Yeah. He softened a little, you know, and she's like, did you impress her? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. She's like, come on. And he goes, I punched a ghost. And he's got a little smirk, you know. There's just like a little more comfort, a little more... less of that sort of dark, grim, horrible, you know, character because he's around. This is like extended family. In a way.
All he's got left. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really good. And again, at some point, maybe I looked in the beginning, but I was reading through it and I just went, God, who's drawing this? This is great. And I was like, oh, Andy Kubert, rad. Like, you know?
Yeah. I was really impressed because, you know, it's funny how comic book brains work. I still think of Andy Kubert as young guy on the scene.
Oh, wow. Really? No.
It's just because, you know, his dad's Joe, you know?
Sure.
But these guys are now, you know, well into middle age, and their drawing skills can fall off. It just happens. And or they change. And but some of this really, really like, sort of terrific Andy Kubert.
I mean, like, I really like what happens with guys, especially who have sort of a slightly cartoonier style, is that they really... tend to focus on efficiency. Darwin Cook did this, you know, and it becomes more about tone and mood and not having to do everything. And I don't like Adam Kubert's work. So I never know which one's which until I look at it. But like Andy Kubert, I really like his work.
It was fun. It was definitely fun. I also really like the Scumbag number 7.
This was very nearly the pick. It was like, it was a toss up between this and Carmen, for a bunch of reasons. Why don't you say why? Because I've talked so much.
All of these books, we said it before, are Rick Remender working out whatever he's annoyed with at the moment. Mm-hmm. Or his fatherhood anxieties. But this is less about that. Mm-hmm. This is more about...
what the fuck is going on in the world?
Right. I was trying to figure out a way to say this, but Rick is a super... you know, liberal guy, but this is him sort of poking fun at the ultra progressive side of things and the hippies who want to force everyone to act good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this main character, the Scumbag guy, is awful, but he's just funny enough that you kind of don't care.
I really thought that, I think at first there are a lot of questions like, well, how does this work out with the dude if he has to be good, but he's the worst person or whatever? And it's almost, and he's really starting to work out the thing where basically like one of the bad guys who are, you know, the far left people, and then the other bad guys are the far right people. So it's not,
right.
It's a little of everything. It feeds on your guilt. You know, and so they go after him, and they were like, "You have no guilt," you know, and that's really funny, you know, and it's not like Remender is a guy who doesn't talk about his insecurities or put them up there, and so like this weird fucking character becomes this sort of amazing cipher, and I think that he's honing in on the best ways to use him. I think this book is better now than it was at the beginning as we sort of figured it out. I thought it was a really great bunch of comments on, you know, what's kind of happening in culture.
Well, the beginning is all about, we see the villains who, you know, they're the far right guys. They dress like Proud Boys, and but then it's just revealed they're the puppets of, you know, the billionaire class, which is
who are not supposedly
supposed to be down with. But the guy's like, well, they pay the best, so who gives a shit?
Yeah.
So that, and that's kind of a, you know, that's a, that's very, very on the nose. I like that their plan was, I forgot about this. Their plan is to use this, this magic gobbledygook machine, doesn't really matter, to merge the present with the '50s, because that was the last great time in America. Like,
yeah,
that was pretty awesome. Whatever this, this machine that the hippie group has, will allow them to do that. They're going to merge right now with the last era where America was truly great. And we see images of Bobby Soxers, and we see Elvis, and we see 50s cars. And sure, go for it. But and then the other side, the hippies, they want everyone to act right. So they're going to force it. And the scumbag's like, well, that's just fascism, which is slightly more enlightened than I think he'd be, but it didn't matter because it worked for
feels like there's another word for that that rhymes with lashist. And I, that took me a second. I had to say it out loud, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And I did think, I thought, I don't think he's going to use that word, but whatever. My favorite bit was there's the one guy, and I think he might have a top knot, and he goes after them. Yeah, he does have a top knot. And he starts yelling, like, really basic liberal statements. I got my dogs from a shelter. Donald Trump is bad. I'm against misogyny. and the lady robot, the sexy lady robot's like, your power appears to be screaming opinions that any decent person already agrees with. And I was like, you nailed it, Rick. That's the thing.
my favorite recurring joke throughout this series has been that he just wants to join an orgy.
He
keeps stumbling on them. All of these groups seem to be having them.
And he immediately takes his pants off.
Yeah, but
all right, I'm here.
They just won't let him get in on the orgy. And that's a funny recurring joke. This book's really good.
Yeah. This was definitely nearly pick of the week. This was the other sort of toss up with it.
And
I was surprised about that.
The only downside to this book I can find is there have been a lot of artists. And normally his books have a very consistent look and feel to them.
Yeah, but I feel like he's doing this with his own like little all-star gallery. Like that, or all the people.
All the art's been terrific. It's just that.
And it's also been consistent enough so I know who the characters are from book to book.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying the art's bad. I'm used to his books having like the same look and feel throughout the whole thing for the most part. And this one is like had like three or four artists in it.
I think the first change that happened, I was like, oh, what are you doing? And then I actually don't know what book this guy did with Rick, if any, but this artist is great.
Yeah, really, really, really good. Francesco Mobili.
Yeah. He there's a lot of, it's like a lot of different artists combined into one with a ton of energy. He has that same kind of energy that, Matteo Scalero had, I think.
Yeah.
In the drawings. Really beautiful book. Very exciting storytelling, too. And now, a word from our sponsor. From us.
The latest expansion for DC Universe Online, World of Flashpoint, is out now. Unlike previous expansions, World of Flashpoint is free to everyone permanently. In this expansion, the Flash's time travel accidentally created an altered timeline where everything and everyone is different. Thomas Wayne, Batman's father, is Batman. Cyborg is the quintessential superhero. Wonder Woman and Aquaman are at war. So it's up to you to fix the timeline. Travel across a diverse set of Flashpoint-inspired locations like the new open-world area of Flashpoint Gotham City, new areas of Atlantis and Themyscira, and even Nightmare Central City. Earn new rewards, including a normal and enhanced version of the Pyromaniac, a heatwave-inspired gear suit, as well as the Ultimate, a Doomsday-inspired gear suit.
Ready to play? Download DC Universe Online for free on PC, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Nintendo Switch. Create your unique superhero or supervillain with special powers and a look all your own and start playing today. What is DCUO? In DC Universe Online, you create your own unique superhero or supervillain in the legendary DC Universe. Fight alongside hundreds of iconic DC characters like Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, as well as thousands of other players. Level up your powers, master movement modes like flight, learn powerful attacks, and swoop into skillful action combat using a variety of weapons, gadgets, and artifacts. Drawing on comic book storylines from the entire history of DC, your adventures are vast, varied, and always growing. World of Flashpoint is their 40th episode with no end in sight. Inspired by the events of DC's Flashpoint storyline, the next expansion for DC Universe Online is Episode 40, World of Flashpoint, released on April 15th and is free for all players on PC, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Nintendo Switch.
Thanks to DC Universe Online for sponsoring this episode.
I'm going
to
go play.
Superman number 30, Philip Kennedy Johnson, Scott Godlewski.
I really like this.
I'm trying to remember what happened in it. Oh, right.
The alien planet.
Yes.
And it's sort of him and his son, and he's at the beginning there, he's having a perfect day with they're playing mini golf with them, and they go fly off, and there's just sort of, and it's basically a mystery. Like they're working mm-hmm. out something isn't right here about what's going on, and you know, none of this should work according to what I want out of Superman, this father and son thing, but it's been a really interesting relationship. You know, this is a good old fashioned space mystery. There's, you know, a lot of gosh in here.
I like the idea that, you know, when Superman saves the day on some alien planet, maybe that doesn't, he's not really saving the day.
Right.
Not that he's failed. I'm not saying I like that he's failed. It's that, you know, he leaves because it's not his planet and things progress. Maybe not in the best way.
Well, the other thing is that I think...
Oh, we have to clean up... he's got to clean up a mess that started, you know, however many years ago.
You tell me, this feels like a very Star Trek thing where the people there have a different take on mm-hmm. language and morality or whatever. So, like, the things that we're used to as normal isn't necessarily what they mean, and you have to be really careful when dealing with them, which is any, you know, sort of culture. There's different, but this is yep. alien, so it's even further right. out. And yes. so what you think is happening isn't exactly happening because they're looking at it from a completely different perspective. And I think that is a fantastic, you know, sci-fi device, just good sort of old-fashioned Roddenberryan sci-fi. Yes. And I think Philip Kennedy Johnson has a great Superman voice. It just really, you know, it's human, but he's Superman. He's doing the thing. I don't really remember. I know that I didn't like the Bibbo story at the end of the other one, but right. this ambush bug story, which I didn't love, but it was very silly and it was beautifully drawn by Sammy Basri.
Yes.
Really.
Well, we only had one shot of Bibbo, so we didn't get a chance to really malign his character this time.
That's right.
But
I'm fine with
it. Ambush bug is what ambush bug, you know. It's silly.
I mostly it's just fine. Like looking at the art. I think
the art was gorgeous.
Yeah.
It was Sammy Basri, and also I want to call out the colors from Ulysses Areola. That can't be the way you pronounce that.
I didn't sorry. Write that in the script. That's my fault.
No, it's fine.
It does look like Areola. I'll give you that.
I thought that looked really beautiful. Yeah. I don't know why. I was hoping we'd find out why. Sweet Tooth, The Return number 6 was the final issue from Jeff Lemire, The Return to Sweet Tooth on Black Label. And I figured, well, by the end of this, surely we'll figure out why this happened. And I don't know why this happened.
It's basically exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. It was like, it was good. I wasn't lost by the end. And I mean, by good, this felt like it was Sweet Tooth. But ultimately, like, I don't know what the point of it was. And I don't know why they did it.
But we have all the respect in the world for Jeff Lemire and sure. all the respect in the world for the original Sweet Tooth, which we all read and really loved. But I feel like if you're going to return to your seminal, and I mean seminal, Jeff Lemire has done a ton of seminal indie work, but this was like his seminal Vertigo series.
Yeah.
And if you're going to return, I feel like you got to have something to say. And I don't know what he was saying here that made the return worth it.
I mean, like, there's sort of a thing about, you know, the cult is their leadership and they're trying to tell them one thing so they can retain power, and it might not be true, but you know, I felt like it wasn't bad. I wasn't like, that was garbage, but at the end I was like, that's what it was, and I thought it was important to comment on that just because I'd read through it, and it was weird that it came back. And so I read through it with a lot of, you know, like, I was like, well, I should be reading this. I really enjoyed the other thing, and it just didn't really pay off.
Right. It was weird.
Did you read Home number 1 from Image Comics?
I was
Comics?
Going to, then I saw, so I read the, you know, the summary on Image, and it was like, you know, a story about the migrant crisis. I was like, well, that could be interesting. And then I got to the end of the summary and it was like, and then their superpowers. And I was like, nope.
So
I don't need to inject superpowers or supernatural situation into what's going on in the border right now.
So all I did was look at the front and sort of like flip through the first couple of pages. And, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then I get to the very end and there's a superhero-y thing. I was like, yeah, you didn't need to do that. Because I was really excited because 90% of this book is just a mother and a boy. They come to America from Guatemala. They don't know what's happened, the changes in the U.S. between it. This is a left-leaning book, by the way. If you want to call this left, but, you know, like, it's fully the perspective of what they did to immigrants coming to the border and separating the kids is absolutely wrong and evil. It's actually a little arch with some of the characters, and I thought, God, is it that bad? But actually, I've read enough to know that it pretty much was this bad in a lot of places. And yeah, you didn't need the turn. Basically, the kid flames on. I mean, that's what it is, you know. And it was totally compelling enough on its own to tell that story. I get it; it's comic books or whatever. But I was kind of like, but everything, you know, it was good. Like the sort of story and the cartooning, you know, I think it was worth reading. But I don't think that other thing was necessary. Just like you,
Spider-Man, Spider's Shadow number one, Chip Zdarsky, Pasquale Ferry, Matt Hollingsworth, Joe Caramagna. I am annoyed.
Yep,
I liked this, but I'm annoyed. There's a what if stamp on it, like it's an Elseworlds book.
And I didn't even see that. My complaint was going to be that it should just be a what if book, which I guess is up there.
It's on the cover.
It's tiny.
So what if's one of my favorite Marvel things of all time. Oh. I loved what if comics as a kid. You know, the whole idea of what if was it was like a one shot book that explored what would happen if something different happened in the Marvel universe. Like for instance, Peter Parker saved Ben, or Captain America never came out of the ice, or you know, things like that. Like, well, and then it would be a morality tale. We'd find out that the true path in Marvel was the better path because everything went to shit the other way.
It's the Twilight Zone in comics.
Yeah. You know? It was great.
Yep.
So, first of all, I think there's a big disservice, as you've discovered, not putting What If in the title. Because I didn't really realize. I thought it was another, because Chip Zdarsky did that Spider-Man Through the Ages book. I thought this was similar. And so then you have to look and see there's a little what if stamp in the corner.
I didn't even see that until just now when you said it. And it's not even like they couldn't minimize it more if they wanted to. In fact, it looks like a fucking Q. Anyway. Yes, it does.
It's so that I think that's a problem. I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem that it's a full mini series what if story, but I think you gotta use your branding and just go, what if Spider-Man, what if Peter Parker became Venom, which is basically what this story is.
I think in general it's an awful cover. I think it's a bad cover. The illustration that Phil Noto did is great, and it totally fits with what's in the story, but it doesn't. This doesn't tell me what this is at all. And I think the title's bad. I think the design of the title's bad. It's right in the middle of the thing. Nothing wrong with the illustration. It's got a different. It's got this really weird. It's red and black as the shadowy mood thing that I just. Like a shadowy is exactly what they wanted, but it just doesn't feel like what was inside. Because then you flip it, and you've got this Pasquale Ferry art. I really enjoyed reading it. I thought the inside was great. I just think it was mislabeled, basically. It's not going to attract the kind of people who want to read the story
that's
hard to find.
I don't know why you run from the branding. Or I just don't understand. Like maybe, I guess they have data, maybe what, you know, because they tried What If a while ago. But I think I would argue that they did a bad job when they tried What If a while ago. They didn't understand the core concept. It was What If always works better when it was just, you were examining something from the past as opposed to like last time they did What If, or at least I remember doing What If was like, what if the comic book came out last week was different? It's like, well, that's not.
Right.
That's
not. No, it wasn't about the real pivotal turning points. What if So the ones that are in here, are what if Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four? What if Doom became the Sorcerer Supreme? What if Spider-Man's uncle had lived? But that what if has to be pretty prominent. Like you really got to work for it on this.
And yeah. So I think that's a big mistake. If you didn't know, you had no idea. And even in the logo, what if is real tiny in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are we trying to kid here? You know, like you're going to fool people into reading this? Like you're going to find more people who want to read a what if book than you are going to be like yet another Spider-Man miniseries that's indistinguishable. I don't know. I bought it based on the creator. And you know, like I got it because I was like, oh, Chip Zdarsky doing this. And then I figured out what it was. It is really clear at the beginning. When you sort of flip the page, but
I love this era of Spider-Man.
Yeah, and, it's great.
The only criticism I'll give the book itself is if you're going to be in the era, you got to give Mary Jane the crazy curls.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, she's got the straight, you know, hair here, but in that time she had like the crazy McFarlane curls.
Yeah, it was huge. That's what models looked like then. All right.
Lock and Key, The Sandman, Helen Gone number one. This is the first issue of the actual miniseries. We had that prelude special a while back that included some reprints, but this is the actual first issue. And I really liked it. Joe Hill, Gabriel Rodriguez, the usual team behind Lock and Key. And in the events of the last issue, and then we also have the events of, this ties into the Lock and Key miniseries that just came out, the World War One miniseries. So that family is the main protagonist. The son had died in that story. And we flash forward here. The younger sister is now older, and the father is, you know, near death. And she has traveled to England to try to use magic to find a way to get to rescue her brother from hell, because that's where he is since the last miniseries. And that's how she gets involved, and stumbling upon the Dreaming World and Daniel and the House of Mystery and Cain and Abel and all those characters from the Sandman world. So it's very, you know, it's the first issue. We sort of get, you know, into the story and the characters. It's terrific, like all the Lock and Key books are, and actually works with these characters. So it was, I thought it was a lot of fun. I think Sandman fans would like it, but then again, I don't know. They're very touchy.
Are they? I don't know that you have enough information to base that on. You could meet some who are, for
the
sure.
The complaints we used to get when we make Sandman jokes, that's all I'm basing it on.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, like, everybody read Sandman. Just some of the Sandman fans. It's like one of those necessary texts. People of a certain age have read that book who read comics, I guess. We want to thank Mack Weldon for sponsoring the show. Everybody's thinking about spring right now. It's coming. You're going to need to be going back to outdoor activities and workout routines.
Although it is snowing right now.
It is. It's snowing heavily here. We've had, that's a thing. But the thing about Mack Weldon and doing things outside or wherever is layering. And they've got stuff you can layer. Just try. I have some of it. It's good stuff for that. But there are spring essentials because, you know, it will come. I'm not happy about spring, by the way. I love my jacket and I want to wear boots and jackets all year. I'm fine with that. Anyway, body mapping technology, fabric mesh zones, Mack Weldon stealth boxer briefs deliver enhanced breathability and support, and they feel quite smooth. Perfect for everyday wear, to be layered under workout gear. I've used it in both of those instances. For sweatpants, you can wear outside without feeling like you're wearing sweatpants. You want to check out the Ace line. Again, I can confirm that. I've been doing yard work. I've been walking the dog. We're out now. We're doing things. I wore the stealth boxers while skiing, but that's over now. But still, it was spring skiing, so that counts. that looks great. It feels great. From working out to going out, for just literally wearing around the house where we've been forever. It's Mackwell is great for everyday life. There's a wide range of customized fabrics. It's interesting. Like you've got the stealth one. You've got the 18 hour, you've got the air knit, all that different stuff, depending on what you're doing. It's really specialized, and God knows I love specialized items for activities. I'm such a big fan of that. Then there's Weldon Blue, which is a totally free loyalty program. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life. Once you reach level 2, which is by spending a cumulative $200, you will get 20% off every order for the next year. That's baller. The guarantee is that they want you to be comfortable. If you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep them and they'll still refund you. No questions asked. 20% off your first order. If you haven't, I can't imagine listening to this to you and haven't thought, oh man, I should take it. But if you haven't, 20% off your first order, MackWeldon.com/iFanboy. Enter promo code iFanboy. Mack Weldon is reinventing men's basic. And I, for one, am glad for it.
So those were the books earlier we wanted to talk about. But the patron pick is voted on by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. They get to add a book to the rundown. This week was almost decided before it was ever actually voted on.
Dark Hawk, Heart of the Hawk. And I thought, there's your patron pick. Like 8 a.m. Monday. Or
it was
Wednesday.
They wouldn't even allow the betting at the patron betting in the Vegas casinos. They shut it down. Dark Hawk, Heart of the Hawk, number one, featuring three stories of Dark Hawk for his 30th anniversary, which, by the way, I don't like to think about. So this is a lot of fun. So our old co-host Ron gets a lot of notoriety for being the Dark Hawk guy, because when Dark Hawk came out, he bought 25 copies of the first issue. You weren't reading comics 30 years ago, right?
Not at this point. That was in my hiatus area. I really just missed the Image boom.
Right. So everyone was all about Dark Hawk of our age, which was, I think, 30 years ago makes it about 3 years old. Everyone who I was reading comics with was all about Dark Hawk. We were obsessed. I have one of those distinct sense memories of reading that first issue of Dark Hawk. We were obsessed with Dark Hawk. We were obsessed with the New Warriors. You know, there was this feeling that we had all these new characters that were going to be ours. And that didn't really last ultimately. But so Ron may have bought 25 copies of the first issue, but everyone reading comics then was at least in my circle of friends, was huge Dark Hawk fans. I was a huge Dark Hawk fan.
Yeah, I missed it. So when you guys were talking about it, I just lumped that in with like other stuff from that time that came and everyone was like, ah! And then it went away. But I can say that Ron at one point sent me the Darkhawk trade, I guess the first mini series, I want to say it was 6 or 7 issues, and I read it. So this wasn't
great.
I wasn't going in not knowing anything. So
my last point will be that there was an attempt, and I guess it's been an attempt throughout the ages to create the new Spider-Man, right? So Nova, I think, was that attempt in the 70s, and Darkhawk was that attempt in the 90s to create the new young character for the kids, you know, that the kids will relate to. They're all from Long Island or Queens.
Everyone.
You know? Peter was from Queens. Nova was from Long Island. Doc Ock's from Queens. So they're all, you know, it's literally, they're all trying to just replicate Spider-Man, and it never really sticks. But here we have three stories. The first one from Danny Fingeroth and Mike Manley, the original creative team on the book, was my favorite. Mostly because I didn't, you know, we'll get to the other ones in a second. But, you know, very much in the first year of the Darkhawk stories, I vaguely remember these people. It's been a long time.
His dad was a cop. Sense. They thought he died as a hero, but it turns out that he was getting paid by the local mob bosses. And then, what's his name? Darkhawk. Saw something. And so then the mob boss went after him, but then the mob boss also has a pretty daughter.
Right.
And an alien comes down and he gets a suit and a story. Oh, he's got a mom and a little brother. And so he's always late.
He's Spider-Man. My favorite bit of this first story was, so Darkhawk goes on a date with the mob boss's daughter because her date was an asshole. And so she just grabs this random dude and takes him on a date to Lincoln Center. And that's where this other guy attacks Savage Steel, who turns out is his father. And my favorite bit is that the mob guys show up and one of them has a bazooka. And there's another mob guy who is loading the bazooka for him. It was like it was Band of Brothers. Mm-hmm. It was like really complicated.
That's a very specific thing to like the most.
He's got a satchel with extra ammo.
Yep.
He puts the next propellant in the bazooka, taps the guy in the head.
You know what I think is nice is that those guys, like, they've done this. They're practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Just, that's very funny. I didn't see that.
The other guy's going to load it for him. And the other guy's got like a Thompson submachine gun. It's like these guys are right out of Band of Brothers.
Well, given I don't know when this takes place, but nope. No, they wouldn't be that old.
So I thought it was fun. I thought it was a fun throwback. It was nice. I remember even going to New York Comic Con in the 90s and getting Mike Manley to sign my copy of Darkhawk #1, which is now, you know, gone. But we were huge Darkhawk fans. Then the second story was tied into the Abnett and Lanning cosmic stuff. So it was written by Dan Abnett, drawn by Andrea DeVito. And I didn't read any of that, so I was less invested in this.
I may have read a little. I mean, I recognize the tone and the era that we're going down. See, what's funny is that I didn't read any of that stuff then. And then when Darkhawk first, I can't say the word,
you
apparently.
Can't say it, Darkhawk.
I don't know why. My diction has really become a problem. When he came back at some point and they had said, oh, this is Darkhawk. He was like in a AA meeting or something. Like he's fucked up. He's not okay. He's been through some shit. You know, it was like he was in Nam. And, you know, those are the only two versions of the characters. And I have never really seen anything in the middle, you know. Like, it's funny because he was supposed to be like, hey, let's appeal to the kids. And then 25 years later, like, let's appeal to the disillusioned adults. And that's what the character is. He's a cipher. And it was all fine.
He went to some, you know, Star Wars bar and he fought the Brood. And it was enjoyable. I just didn't read this era of those books. And in the last story, I assume, which takes place, quote unquote, now, written by Kyle Higgins, who
is doing
a
Darkhawk book.
Radiant Black is doing a Darkhawk book, drawn by Juan. Is that a typo? Juanan?
No, it is not a typo.
Juanan Mirrierez. Takes place now, and I assume we'll be tying into the inevitable Darkhawk series that's coming. Because this is coming this later, Darkhawk stories again.
So do you think Kyle Higgins is going to write a Darkhawk series and then a faux Darkhawk series?
Apparently he is.
Wow. That's good work if you can get it.
So Darkhawk here is very disillusioned.
He's like, here's what I want to do in the book. And they're like, no. He goes, it's cool. I got it. or it goes the other way. Like, these stories are kind of boring. Yeah, really? Huh. I don't know what I'm doing with the good ideas. Sideways look.
So he sends himself into some sort of dark black hole and sends his magic crystal away. I don't know. I like this one the least, but that's just because
I literally have no recollection of it. I mean, I read it like yesterday.
Yeah.
Nothing. It did not stick.
He flashes back to the two previous stories in this issue, and then he's sort of like committing suicide, but not really. Mm-hmm. But kind of.
Everything changes.
So
one Darkhawk, one decision. What
I liked this as a book, Darkhawk Heart of the Hawk, number one, as a tribute to this character who was a big deal for like 15 minutes in the 90s. On his 30th anniversary, that they're going to try to bring back because that's what has to happen inevitably. So I'm going to rate this book out of 5, a 3.5, because I enjoyed it. Even if it was, you know, didn't all touch me in the ways it could have, I had fun reading it.
I'm going to go with 2.5. I really only thought it was kind of fun to read the first bit because it was throwbacky, but being done now and it was done by the same people, and I'm always interested in that kind of thing. And so that kind of comic book was kind of, it was fun to sort of
be in that
world.
The first bit was the best bit.
But ultimately, I don't care. I could have not read this and it would have been just fine, you know, but it wasn't bad if you like this kind of thing, I think.
I'm gonna rate it 3.55 and give it the extra 0.05 for the bazooka.
Okay, I will add that as well.
Okay. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give it the $5 higher level, we are so late. There were so many books. You get your superpower live on the show, like these four patrons.
Didn't even put an email in the show today. Didn't bother.
No.
Scott Ricketts can de-cook foods. Like if
de-cook. Ooh.
If he overcooks it, he can walk it back.
Can he walk it back totally uncooked?
Theoretically, yes. Yeah,
like we made too many, I can uncook this and put it in the freezer?
I didn't even think of that, but yes. He can de-cook foods.
Interesting.
He can't like pull the ingredients apart again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if you made too much sauce, you know, that stuff's all still intermingled. It's just raw if you go that far. But really, in terms of like, oh, we overcooked the such and such, he bring it back. You want this guy there at Thanksgiving.
Right. The turkey's not going to be dry.
Yep.
But Scott, dial this back like 10%.
Yeah, there you go. We should have taken this out 12 minutes ago. I got you, dog. This pasta's a little squishy.
Don't worry about it. I'm all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Foley is going to wish he had the power I thought of while I couldn't sleep the other night, but I can't remember what that was, so I'm sorry. Patrick Foley never needs sunscreen. He doesn't absorb the UV rays, the radiation from the sun.
Wow. He has SPF unlimited skin.
Yes. And he doesn't tan either. But
that's fine.
He doesn't have to worry about cancer.
Or I mean, presumably he's also got incredibly smooth skin.
Right. He
like
doesn't
he
wrinkle.
Looks.
Yeah. He just looks great.
Yeah, he just looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was having a fantasy there for a moment. Lucas Muck. I don't know if I pronounced the E. Mucka? Mookie? Mucky? Lucas? Listen, Lucas is spelled differently, so it's not a name in my native tongue, is my guess. But Lucas remembers every phone number he's ever seen.
Oh.
So once he's dialed, read, looked at, you know, saved a phone number, he knows it forever. What's the number of that sub shop over there? He knows it. Now,
does he have to make that sound while he accesses it?
No, that was.
It might be cool if he does.
Yeah. Okay. Then yes, he also makes that sound when he's remembering. he is a clicky old computer sound. And he's got that. Now this power is almost useless in today's world, where A, no one calls, and B, you can just be like, "Hey Siri, call this person."
But I would actually argue the opposite, because like no one knows any phone numbers now because you just tap a name on your phone. So like if you're ever in a situation where like your phone's dead or something, or you're like, I don't know, arrested,
uh-huh,
and you need to make a phone call, like you're going to call your wife. I don't know. I know her name.
I
know her number. But
like, I know three phone numbers.
Right, exactly.
I know my wife's phone number. I'm not counting mine. I know my wife's phone number. I know my mom's phone number. And I don't know why. I know Ron's phone number. Because he's had it for 20 years, and it's got a pattern to it that's easy to
remember. Also got like three digits in it.
Yeah. I don't know your phone number, but you also, do you still have your New York number?
I have a New York number still, but I've had like four phone numbers.
Yeah, I think that's why.
Ron's had one the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuart Condy. Let's see. What does Stuart Condy do?
I'd like to point out that I was prepared today, and I hope it showed.
Good job. I think you did a really good job.
Instead of thinking about something to fill this airtime, just tell me how I did.
Stuart Condy, what can you do, Stuart? So, you know what Stuart can do? Stuart, do you ever have trouble sleeping, Josh?
Yeah.
Do you ever know anybody else who has ever, do you know people who have trouble sleeping?
Yeah.
Yes, Stuart can help anyone have a good night's sleep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He, just being around him for the day, he's like a natural sleep aid. Mm-hmm. Just his aura. So if you hang out with Stuart for the day, everyone who hung out with him is just going to sleep real, get full eight hours.
Wow.
Restful.
Like with enough of the deep sleep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You get your full REM cycle. You don't wake up to go to the bathroom. Nothing.
I listened to a mini audio documentary book on caffeine, which is about the history of it, how it works with the world and everything. But then going back and forth on the idea of if it's harmful or not, because you'll always see a billion stories like, actually, coffee's good for you or whatever. And the one person they talked to was like a sleep expert. And he's like, no, it's fucking us up big time. You know, so like the thing is
caffeine and screens.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was interesting. So basically what I think happens to me is I don't have a problem going to sleep, but I wake up and then I'm up.
Yeah.
And I
have the same problem. Yes. But not if Stuart was hanging out all day.
That's nice. Do you have to, does he have to like sleep with you?
It's just like, I mean, you'd get a really good night's sleep if he was in the bed with you, but it's just, if you spend the day in his aura, you know, it's like his aura is a natural sleep aid.
It's a soporific.
Yes.
Stuart the soporific.
Stuart Lucas, Patrick Scott, thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. You're the ones who keep the show going, and we appreciate you all.
Let's bring it home.
Let's do some plugs and get out of here.
So real quick, you guys know we did ads. You know about Patreon.com/iFanboy. iFanboy.com/support for a more direct thing. There's iFanboy.threadless.com. And by the way, ideas are coming, kids.
Yes.
We've got stuff going on there.
Yes, ideas.
For shirts and sundries and items. And then finally, ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you'll find a link to Amazon. And there's all the music that we do on the show is linked. All of the Books Explodes and the Pick of the Week is always linked there as well, should you wish to purchase them like that.
And this month, this past month, we had the Books Explode for Avengers West Coast Vision Quest. A lot of fun. A lot of fun doing that show. Check it out. It's on the feed back behind a couple of shows back, but it's there. You don't have to be well-versed in Avengers West Coast, I think, to enjoy it.
Clint is dead.
Clint is dead. Patron Hangout, April 24th. That's Saturday, the usual time. 4 o'clock for the happy hour, 6 o'clock Pacific for the main hangout. You don't have to watch all of it. You know, if you just want to come for the hangout, that's all. That's cool too. Come hang out with us for an hour.
I don't.
April 24th, and we'll be talking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier because it'll just have wrapped. We'll be talking about the Oscars, which is the next day, doing our Oscar picks for our patron Oscar pool, and that'll be fun. And then the following week or that week, we'll have the Media Explode because we normally record those right after the hangouts, which is why I'm a little drunk on those. Who knows what we'll be talking about then? I don't know. We haven't decided yet, but. That's all that's coming this month. And then Josh will have a talks about this month. Nope, that's next month.
Then next month.
Next month. I was trying to give Josh extra work, but that didn't work.
Yeah.
Excellent. Head over to fanboy.com.
I've tried to do that several times, by the way.
You can find all of our shows that we've done over the years, 1,000 more shows over at fanboy.com. You can find them all there. Facebook.com/iFanboy. That's where you can follow us at iFanboy on Twitter, at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. And hey, there's our YouTube page, youtube.com/iFanboy. That's where we've been uploading all of our old video shows as unlocked by the patrons. This past week, we had a mini that was a new comic book preview from the week that Final Crisis number one came out. And then we had Marvel Knights show, a look back at Marvel Knights and how
that's
important
that was. That's still worth reading. are watching, I'm sure.
The Marvel Knights show?
Yes.
Yes. Really good show about how Marvel Knights came about, how it affected Marvel and the industry, and how it changed everything. And then we did a show about romance comics in honor of Valentine's Day.
Oh.
So no idea what we even talked about there, but there, you can check that out. That was a long time ago.
If you like this show, write us a review, leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever app you're using, Spotify. I think Amazon has them now, all sorts of things like that. Better yet, tell your friends about it. Tell your mom, tell your kid. No, don't do that. I mean, let's put an age limit on anyway, like 14, yep. 15, something like that. Anything lower than that, we don't take responsibility for it. I figure if you're listening to this, though, you're probably not like, oh, no, they said a naughty word. tell your letter carrier about it, in which cases either you still want to stay about 6 feet away from those people. That's my that's my words. You can help us spread the word about the show. That's how it happens. And thank you to everybody who does that still to this day after 1,000 shows. That is really rad. That's your show. That's a lot.
That was a lot. There was a lot of books. We went long, but we had fun. And that's the most important thing. And we learned a lesson or two.
I had a whole thing about how all the indie comics are either kaiju or apocalypse, and I didn't get to it. So right. Wait for that. I'm Josh.
I'm Connor. See you next week.
Bye.